Thank you, Bill.
For a small town, this is a lot of people, isn't it? The sheriff didn't let a few of you out, right?
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Tom Flynn. I'm an alcoholic. Let's get the housekeeping out real fast. I have a sponsor, and I have some adventures. Some guys who call me sponsor. They're desperate ones, see. They call me sponsor. And I have a home group, which is the Harbor City Speakers Meeting in Baltimore. It meets on Thursday night, standard drunk time, 8:30. And you certainly are welcome to go up there. When you walk into that meeting and see the men and women there, they are sober and very uncool people. They're actually sober, and they got the nerve to tell their faces about it. They're walking around like they're happy. Very uncool. You know, that's where they are, though. You have to get some sophisticated people, I guess, to educate us, but we're sort of happy about being sober. And that's what the power of attraction is about. You know, that's what I believe it's about. Recovered people seem to be happy about being sober. Now, I am not a problem drinker. If you're a horrible problem, no. Life was a problem. Alcohol was the answer. I can find an answer in some booze real quick. So that makes me an answer drinker. There's a little bit of a problem being an answer drinker. And that is, I always ran out of answers before I ran out of problems. So there I am, a shortage of answers and a surplus of problems. I'm so different than you, right? Yeah, right. I've been with you guys since August 14, 1980. I was here 4 months before I found out you could leave. Nobody told me you could leave. And when you're as desperate as me, you're not looking for the back door. You're looking for the front door to come in. If you're not really desperate, you know, just think you're desperate. You look for the back door. I want to come to AA and say, I tried and I tried everything, now I go back to drinking. How do you know? Well, I had that goofy thinking before you. I'm older than you. I beat you to it. The guys come to me and I said, now look, if you want to lie to me, it's okay. It's okay, but I want you to remember one thing. Please, I beg you, use some imagination. I'm a better liar than you, too. So, if you're going to lie to me, it's okay, but for God's sake, don't bore me to death. Give me some little sauce for it. Something like that, eh? That's how we are. That's how a guy like me is. I'll go in a bar room and when I first go in, I wouldn't talk to anybody. I'm a little bit shy, you know. I have a couple of drinks. I talk to the guy next to me. Right away, I'd lie. I just met him. But I'm lying. I don't know why I'd lie. I think I was just practicing or staying in practice properly. So I would tell him, yeah, I'm the vice president of my company. Well, I wasn't. I was the office manager, about 3 ranks down. Well, I just gave myself an incentive promotion or something like that. You know, that's what I would do. And, like, he gave a darn, you know. Yeah, I'm making $100,000 a year. I was making about $30,000 or something like that. I noticed something about my lying. I always multiplied by 3. I seldom used 2. And I never was so proud to use 4. But I used 3 all the time. See? Like I was going to give him some money, you know. Crazy. I was a great lover. Yeah, I got 9 girlfriends, I told him. 9. It's a lie. Oh, I had 3. 2 didn't know it. And the one that did was trying to escape.
great lover. That's all I'm just saying. Yeah, right. That's kind of stuff I tell you. I broke every promise you broke. I forfeited every shred of dignity and integrity that you forfeited. I did all that stuff. And I got to you guys, thank God, as a result of some direct hits in my life. A near miss won't do anything to move me. A bullet could whiz past my ear a quarter inch away, and I will admire them home. What was that, Tom? C sharp. Yeah. Damn it. The one that hits you right through, boom, put me down. What's that? You've been shot. Okay, now you can talk to him. We got his attention. Direct hits, that's what I need. And I'm going to tell you what they were specifically. I was married for 25 years, obviously to a patient woman. And I got divorced, obviously to a woman who became a little wiser. And she had no major character defects. I would say, I like to say that she was some kind of a bitch, but that would not be true. She had no major character defect. Poor judgment, maybe. But outside of that. And she just couldn't take it anymore. Well, I come from an Irish Catholic background, and I had a lot of guilt and shame about that divorce business. You know? I'm one of nine kids. Nobody in my family ever got divorced except me. You know, they get married, some for better, some for worse, some just break even, but they stay married. That's what they do. You know? Not me. I'm alcoholic, you know. I'm divorced. Oh, we later became pen pals, you know. She sent me a bill. I sent her a check. That's how that goes. It's been like that since Eve, and it ain't going to change by Tuesday, so don't none of you guys get excited. That's how it was, see. But that's a direct hit. You know. I was a prophetic liar. I did become the vice president of a pretty good-sized mid-Atlantic company. And in my 29th year with that company, I got fired. That's a direct hit. I didn't get a letter of reprimand in my personnel file. That's clean as it is. Here, go blow your nose. Tom, you're a talented guy. Many a company can use a guy of your talent. We are no longer one of those companies that we'd like to have your keys at 2 o'clock this afternoon. A direct hit. I made a lot of money. I could have retired probably when I was about 34. I made too much money that was healthy for me to make. See? I always knew how to make a living, but I never knew how to live successfully until I experienced the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And the ability to make a living and the ability to live successfully and be sort of satisfied in your own skin, you know, here and now, comes from the 12 steps. For me, that's my experience. What it takes for you, I don't know. You know what I mean? That's what I love about AA. We don't tell other people what they should do. I just tell you what I did. That's all. It's real simple. That's the ultimate respect for another individual. That's what I love about AA. They won't give you a single thou shalt not. I love what AA says. They don't say thou shalt, huh? They say we did. Hell of a difference. We did. They don't say you got to do. They said we did. You may want to try, but we did. You don't have to do it. You can stay here. Do what you want to do. I need you. You need me. Yeah, but you're my teacher. Tom, I've been screwed up all these years, you know. How can you say I'm your teacher? Hell, man, you teach me what not to do. You absorb all the pain for me. I need you. Sometimes I think I'm well. And I see you. You tell me how well you are, and the next month I'm bailing you out, stitching you up. You're normal patchwork. Sure, that's what we do. See? I went broke. I was living in an area where guys like Jim Palmer and sports figures from the Baltimore area lived. Well, I lived in that kind of a neighborhood. It was, you know. And my next address was under the bridge, last bridge you cross over before you go into Fort McHenry. And deliver mail there, by the way. It was a nice bridge. It was a double-deck railroad bridge. For bridges, I mean, you know. It's a nice bridge. And you, for those of you who contemplate bridge dwelling, I could give you a few pointers on etiquette, bridge etiquette. If you get a double-decker bridge, always try to pick a railroad bridge. When they're being used, they're noisy as hell, but they're, a lot of times at night, they're not used all night at all. And always get close to the road bed if you can. Because on rainy days, it keeps the water off you. And never sleep on the lower level if you could avoid it. Because even on dry days, there might be some drunks living above you, and we're noted to be careless with plumbing problems. So use the thing, the top shelf thing that you used in the bar. Well, use that in the bridge, too. It works that way. It's a consistent theory. Top shelf, you know, if you can. That's where I was living, under a bridge. Came to. I didn't know where I was. I didn't wake up. I came to. And there was a window about half as big as those, just two of those doors. And there was a person quite this is way. And I was sitting on a chair. And this person was silhouetted by those doors. Because there were windows in there. And as this person came close, it was a woman person. I mean, I never saw a woman person that big. I mean, she could have made linebacker for the Redskins or the Ravens. It's a big. I mean, not just big. Big! You know. And actually, I called her Mr. Nurse. And when she got close, what's your problem, Buster? I told her what a big shot I used to be and what a fine education I had. And Mr. Nurse said that she was impressed, but not a whole lot, you know. And she went on, I told her I thought the problem was. But she was so big, she blocked out half that window, the whole window. That's how big that woman. Like, you know, like a half a window woman. That's what how big she was. But she got that close to me. And she said, what's your problem? I told her my problem was. There was no knob on my side of the door. And I thought it was an architectural oversight. And Mr. Nurse didn't think so. And Mr. Nurse had the keys, and she was bigger than me. And the matter didn't seem to be open for discussion. And she said, you are nuts, and we have to keep you isolated from the other patients, see? Now, she skipped the child within and all that other nice things. She put me on the downward express elevator. You are nuts. See? Or what are you going to do? She's about 6'3", and maybe 235 pounds. I'm down to about 145, 150 at that time. Right? And she's big and she's, you know. So, I'm nuts. Okay. That explains some things. Explains where I am. Oh, that's good. I'm in a nut house. There I was, great big old nut house. Nuts and knobless. That's just outside stuff. They're outside scars. And they heal rather quickly if you follow some simple directions. So a few inside scars take a while. That's what takes the steps, really. I remember looking into the eyes of people. Whose always serious flaw was to forgive me too often. It was long beyond argument. No more arguments. Long beyond door slamming, various other things. You know, I looked at her eyes, she just missed it over. Nothing was said, just missed it over. And the sound was so loud, but nothing was said. And the sound was, how could you? And my only answer was, I don't know. I just don't know. And that dagger that was already in my heart, my past broken promise, got plunged a little deeper
and got such a violent twist I was stunned into silence and paralyzed into inaction. I stayed that way for about 30 days. Then I said a prayer of desperation to a God I didn't believe in nor trust. I didn't want to make any promises to the other people and hurt them, you know, just being God in this deal. And I broke that promise to God. The promise I broke to those people, love me is the measure of my guilt. I know how to measure mine. The promise I broke to God is the measure of my shame. So when I got you guys, August 14, 1980, I was divorced, fired, broke, nuts, crushed by guilt, shredded by shame, laying on the curb of life and I roll off into the gutter. Well, I came to you guys, I was ready. You don't have to get as bad as me, but I will tell you this, if you're an alcoholic and you continue drinking, you will. Or you can use my experience. That's your business. You see, my job is to make it available. What you do with it is your business. I'm old enough now to mind my own business. That simple. So, come to AA. There's some guy up here, one of those cool guys, sober 5 years, right? Yeah, I'm sober 5 years. Life sucks. I'm hanging in there. My wife is a bitch. My boss is a jerk. And I'm the only good driver in Pennsylvania. And if you want what I have, I'm 3 days out of a nut house. I don't want what that bum has. What, a guy come here 5 years and become a professional pitcher? Boy, that's a good investment of time, ain't it? 5 years, be just like him. Whoa, give me the gun now. Get the hell out of here. Jesus. If you want what I have, I didn't want what he had. I'm only 3 days out of the nut house. And I still knew that. I didn't want to be, you know. There's a guy walking around. Some wise guy says, Tom, you got to find a guy you can relate to. One of them smart guys hit him. And I didn't know for crap I'd ever been to AA, you know. I just didn't know. So I ran into an old timer. I said, I got to find a guy I can relate to. Come on, ask him to be my sponsor. He said, well, there's a guy who came here about a month ago. He just come out of a nut house, too. You can relate to him. I said, wait a minute, this relation thing don't look good. It don't look like two nuts is going to make it. I had to get somebody who was not like me. That became crystal clear instantly. Not nobody I can relate to. I need somebody who was sane. I'm insane, and I got papers in my pocket. Just like a pedigreed dog, like an AKA dog, you know. I got papers. Like my Italian buddy said, hey, Tom, you got your papers? Yeah, I got my papers. I'm nuts. That's okay. Being nuts is good because you don't have to pretend anymore. Yes. Stay next to a window. Where's the window, Tom? I don't know. I'm not an architect. What's your name? I don't have people down here that mess. They know. They're in charge of names. I had some fun with it. You know, I can have fun to telephone booth with a wire's cut. So I ran into this guy. I looked at his eyes, his clear blue eyes, and he said, how are you? He wasn't staring at me, but he didn't take his eyes off my face, and he never looked over my shoulder to see who more important than me walked in that room. And I felt that. I didn't hear it. I felt it. When he said, how are you? He was waiting for an answer because he gave a damn. His deportment and his patience and how he looked, his countenance, that's what I knew. Okay. So I told him the AA answer. I just told you where I was. Fine. He says, I can see that. I said, I need a sponsor. He said, I could use a nut like you in my life. I said, how'd you know I was nuts? I didn't tell you I had paper. He said, oh, just a guess. Yeah, right. And he's been my sponsor over 26 years. I was down in Delaware. He lives in Delaware now. And he just celebrated his 43rd anniversary. He's in his 80s, 84. And his wife of 60 years is with him. Last winter, they, the old folks, went to Belize in Central America to do some missionary work. And I got some guys, 35, won't get off their ass, and I'm going to shoot them. That's what I'm going to deal with. I tell them about him. You know, he embarrasses me. I have to move. If I want to call him sponsor, I have to move. Okay. He asked me, what are you doing? Where are your pigeons? So he says, we are going to do the steps. I said, well, Wally, you told me that, you know, I'm fogged up. You are. You're fogged up. I can't do the steps. They told me I should join an in-depth study group. He says, are they your sponsor? And I said, no, you're my sponsor. Well, I'm going to tell you, you got to do the steps just to lift the fog. And I said the most spiritual words. I say the Lord's Prayer in five languages. I spent 4 years at a major Catholic seminary studying to be a priest. I've been on both sides of the street. Yeah. And down a few alleys. Yeah, I have been there too. I see some of you down there. It could have been your father's or something. Yeah, I did. And I said the most spiritual words I ever said. He said, we're going to do the steps. And I said, okay, Wally. That was an agreement. That's what surrender is. An agreement to follow directions, and I didn't know how they were going to turn out. I was just as scared as you were. Just as scared. Not worse, and not better. That's it. See? So first, he says you read the doctor's opinion three times. Once get used to the language, and once for your brain, if any, and then for your heart, which will work from. It's the best definition of alcoholism I've ever read. It explains the mental obsession and the physical compulsion very clearly. Very, very clearly. It's a big thing, I believe, that we miss in AA. The world tells us, stop drinking, you'll be okay. Many of us have tried to stop drinking successfully. You know, and a lot of us suicide look pretty good at that period of time. Suicide looked good. Went to see my doctor friend. He was starting to be a priest in Jack Sullivan. Big guy, he's a dirty basketball player now. Anyway, I used to play against him. He said, give me the elbow, cut me and everything. Anyway, I'm such a good guy, you know. He says to me, Tom, you're going to die. And then he says the magic words, soon. Yeah, I've always got to hear that. It's got to be soon, or it don't count. And I said to myself, and Jack had gotten big. He was about 6'3 and about 275 pounds, you know. And red hair. He's a pretty impressive guy. Good. His heart was as big as he was. He says, I'd hate to tell you that, Tom. And his eyes missed it over a look because we were good friends. It was hard for him to tell me that's what I'm saying to you, right? And I felt sorry for him. He told me I would advise him, but I think the least I could do is look concerned. You and me, because this is my friend. It's got to be hard for him to tell me that. Then I thought to myself, how do I look concerned? Because you know at the end of your drinking, death is no threat. It's a relief. That tiger's got no teeth. What's he going to do, gum you to death? Sure. Death is not a threat to an alcoholic. It's relief. This crap's over. Waking up in the morning, another day. So Wally says to me, Tom, when you pick up a drink, do you know when you're going to stop all the time? thought, I may as well get honest because he says he's a better liar than me. I says, no, Wally, I don't know when. The arresting officer generally knows when I'm going to stop, you know. The committee judge knows when I'm going to stop. Yeah, that guy. The guy, some people with papers know when I'm going to stop, you know. He says, so it looks like to me, if you pick up a drink, you're powerless over stopping, Tom. Well, if you want to put it that way, Wally. He says, I want to put it that way. I'm the sponsor. You're the pigeon. Keep that straight. I talk, you listen. And I said the magic words again. Okay, Wally. Get in the car, Tom. Okay, Wally. Read 2 pages of the big book every day. He's a sixth grade dropout, and I won the John Carroll Award for translating Homeric Greek. He tells me to read 2 pages of the big book every day. About 6 months later, he explains to me why. He says, you're coming in here, see, and you forgot how to read. You learned how to scan. That's the reason this book looks a little hard to read to you. You never really learned to read. You know how to scan. That's one. He says, two, you're in here and you bring in here the language of the street. You're a taker. This book is written in the language of the heart for givers. It's like you're on the wrong channel. You mean watching TV, you wonder why you got a fuzzy picture. Yes. So we're going to use the same language. That way the communication will be better. That's the reason we read this. But he says, also, I know guys like you, you're going to go 10 days and then read 20 pages. How did he know what I was figuring? Don't be this nailed like that. Where do these guys learn this stuff, you know? So it looks like when I pick up a drink, I'm powerless. He said, didn't you stop a few times? Yeah, well, I stopped. He said, what happened? I said, I went back to drinking. He says, well, it looks like to me, when you stop, you're powerless over starting. Uh-oh, I think he's got me. He just got me on the first question, and when I start, I'm powerless over stopping. And when I'm stopped, I'm powerless over starting. So he says, it don't make any difference whether you're starting or stopping. They are variables. The constant is you are in a powerless condition. That's the thing that's constant. That doesn't change. Sometimes you're sober, sometimes you're drunk. That changes. But the powerlessness stays with you. Unless you find an answer. Where to find the answer, Wally? So he said, why don't you look on page 44? You're a big research guy. Rubbing in, well, for Christ's sake, you know what I mean? I'm sensitive. You remember that? How sensitive. Hand him the Kleenex in him. Let's see. Our human resources, as marshaled by the will, were not sufficient. They failed utterly. Woo. I mean, boy, it's bad fail, but you fail utterly. It stings. I failed utterly. Does it hurt? Yeah. Lack of power. That was our dilemma. That's where he sent me on 44. It don't say lack of booze. It didn't say lack of compassionate spouse. It don't say lack of a trained attorney. Some of the stuff we go through, right? And remember now, alcoholics wrote this. They picked out the dilemma. Alcoholics picked it out. Lack of power was the dilemma. Well, that's the problem, isn't it? Identify the exact nature of the problem before anything can happen. I used to have an old car, man, it would run rough as hell. And I didn't know anything about cars. I was a kid. And I get the car washed. It would look real good. I expected it to run well. So I didn't know what the problem was. I did something, but I didn't know what the problem was. You know what I mean? Well, you got to find out the exact nature of the problem before you... Yeah? Lack of power is the problem. See? He says, now, you're a brilliant guy, Tom. For a guy like you, that lack of power is the problem, what's the answer? I tried to fool crap around. Yeah, I didn't know the answer. See? So he says, We had to find a power by which we could live. Don't say a damn thing about hanging in there. Power by which we can live. To experience life. Not to hang in there. We had to find the power by which we could live. That's the answer. He said, you think I found such a power? I didn't know, but yes seemed like a good answer. So I just said yes, but I didn't know. He says, well, if you believe that, you have just finished the second step. Came to believe that a power greater than yourself can restore you to sanity. You can see the sanity in me, and now you come to believe that maybe you are entitled to the same sanity. You just finished the second step. I said, aren't we going too fast, Wally? He said, did you ever go into a bar slowly? Did you ever sit in a bar and sip? I says, no, I'm a gulper. I ain't no sipper. He says, let's go up these steps. Oh, Wally, I can't do that third step. Why can't you do the third step, then? I hate to tell you, Wally, but I don't believe in God. He starts laughing. He said, you don't believe in God? I says, no, Wally, I really don't believe in God. I can't do the step. Oh, he says, do the step anyway. God don't care what you believe. All that person cares what you believe is you. This guy's you kneeling down in the kitchen of an unemployed truck driver. This guy's you. Where do you get these guys from? You know? The only person that cares what I believe is me. And I'm delusional. Yeah, I'm delusional. Even delusional. 187 times I go to drink. 187 times I get drunk. The delusion is I think 188 is going to be okay. That's a real clear cut description of delusion, right? What I believe to be true is not true, but I believe it. I'm not lying. I actually believe that is the truth. That's what a delusion is. A lot of people will tell you, you're in denial. You're not in denial. That's bullshit. They're selling stuff. In order to be in denial, you've got to know the truth and say it ain't so. Is that true? But if a man don't know the truth, he can't deny the truth. He doesn't know it. He can be delusional, believe that something is not correct. It is the truth. Hell of a difference. AA says you're delusional because we ain't selling nothing. That's what happened. Then Wally says to me, look, Tom, I don't care what you believe. You can go and get on top of a 10-story building and jump off. You're going to go splat, whether you believe in gravity or not. It's that simple. So who cares what you believe? Only you. And only you are harming you. Wow. It goes on like that. You make a list of people you know you don't like, don't you? Well, yeah. A lot of people didn't treat me right. And just because I stole their funds, I was in a fiduciary capacity. And I call it misdirecting funds. It was really called stealing. And I had to pay it back. $180,000 worth of it. I paid it back. But wow. Then I had to admit to my sponsor everything I've done. And most of you did the same thing. I've probably done 500 fist tests with guys. At least 20 with girls. I don't think there's 5% difference in any of them. 5%, I'm telling you. Including mine. I hear them talking to me. I'm saying, Jesus, are they reading my history? No, they're reading theirs out loud. I can't help it if it sounds like mine. It's that simple. Most most of you are holding on to one thing. Most of them. All of them. They had some kind of a sexual experience as a child, and they assumed a lot of guilt for it and all that bullshit. So I'm going to tell Uncle Wally, and I know what he's going to say. Get out of my house. Get out of this county. I don't even want you around my dog. This is my head's telling me. So, while he's sitting down, I'm sitting next to him. I tell you about this sexual experimentation I had as a kid. I was about 8 or 7 or somewhere. And he looks at me for a minute and he goes, how many times? He was so impressed. So, if you got that kind of shit, I beat you to it. I don't have it no more, and you don't have to have it anymore either. Just use the fifth step. That's what I use, and I got rid of it. And so can you. Take care of that. Unless you have a little nostalgia for the gutter, and you like to eat something close to you, that's all right. That's your business. I'm not telling you what to do. He saw me. He says, what are you doing, Tom? I saw these guys running around. AA. And they were, they had counseling and all that. And they were working on their character defects. Boy, that sounded impressive, you know. They were actually working. It very industrious. I wanted to impress Wally how serious I was and how industrious I was. You know, I was going to, you ever see these guys come in and they wear them sweatbands and all? I was going to get a sweatband to wear, you know. Maybe some of you young guys could advise me. Let's just think about the subject. But what's that all about? Most of the guys I know that wear sweatbands are unemployed. What the hell is that all about? They work and they don't sweat. I never get it. The guys that are working like hell, you never see them wear sweatpants. They go, that's it. Right? That's what they do. So, he says to me, what step do you use? Are you working on your... I said, 6. He said, what you say? I'm entirely ready to have God remove these defects of character. And good. He said, who? I said, God. He said, what do you got your fingers in there for? You're delusional. You got a sick mind. And you're using a sick mind to fix a sick mind. I don't think that's going to go far. Totally ready to have God remove these defects of character. If you ain't done the third step, you're screwed. I don't believe in God. You want to get your counselor to do something with you. Seven. What's seven about? Seven is about preparing me to experience the joy of living. And the joy of living is helping one of God's other kids. I remember years ago, 35 years ago, I was out in L.A. I went to the Spectrum to hear the Dalai Lama when he first came. They had a speaker come out there. A guy was a real good speaker from Chicago. A motivator, right? And then the lights went down and the blue lights went on. And out comes this little chunky guy with a silver glass with a yellow, you know, dress on, whatever they call it. He's coming out there. He gets behind the microphone. I thought he was standing on a Coke box. Remember them wood Coke boxes? And he gets there and he says, our main purpose for being here is to help one another. And then he goes, walks up to the wing. And like an afterthought, he got there. Then come back. Gets up on his little box. Fixes his look this. And some of us, because of our current condition, are unable to do that. Therefore, our main purpose is not to hurt anyone. I said, my God, he said more in 2 sentences than that real good speaker said in about an hour. And I didn't really like it because I'm still drinking. And I knew I couldn't cop out. I could always cop out and say, I'm not qualified to help anyone. You know. I cop out with that. But when he threw that other shit in there, some of us can't do that. Her? Mate, we have a purpose, too. Not to hurt anyone. I said, oh, Jesus. See, I couldn't go out the front door or the back door. He nailed me. I was uncomfortable ever since. So we go and help God's other kids. I'm standing in my home group. I'm sober about, I think, maybe 6 weeks. Wally, the sponsor, says, get over there. Stop coming here early and bull crap with your friends. Get over there and help a new man. Oh, boy. I'm not qualified. He says, I know that. And you know that. But he don't know that. Get over there. So I go. And you know what will happen to you? You know what will happen to you if you do that when you're not qualified? You'll pray. I don't want to kill her. You'll talk to your sponsor. I don't want to kill her. You'll go in the big book looking for answers. I don't want to kill him. You'll go to meetings talking to other people for help with her or him. That act will make you embrace all of Alcoholics Anonymous. Quicker, more in depth, and from the heart, say, than all the in-depth study bullshit. In-depth study is like going to a good restaurant and reading the menu and walking out hungry. You gotta eat, for God's sake, man. It's that simple, isn't it? It's that simple. If we have to know everything before we do it, we're building up self-reliance. How can you use a power greater than you when you're striving to build up self-reliance? It's like trying to go north and south simultaneously. Make up your mind. You know? You know, take an igloo or a sunbath. I don't care which one. Make up your mind. That's all. See? That's what we do. Let me touch on something. My brother, there's nine kids. My father died when I was about 19. My youngest brother was a little less than a year old. And I became his oldest brother and his godfather. We ran out of aunts and uncles and all this stuff. And when he got to be 18, he volunteered for the military and volunteered for Vietnam. And said he never wanted to return to Maryland. I lived in Maryland. Again. And at that time, I thought I seriously damaged him emotionally. Now, the other brothers and sisters, four of them went to college. I paid for that. I made a lot of money and all that bullshit. But I thought I had neglected him. He didn't have a father. I didn't spend any time with him, you know. The material crap I could take care of or have somebody else take care of, you know. I could always write a check for it and that kind of crap. And I took a lot of, for 33 years, I carried this around here. He was about 52 or so, and his girlfriend called from Florida. He never returned to Maryland except in a pine box. His girlfriend called and said he was dying from throat cancer, so I went down to see him. I'm flying down, sitting on a plane, you know, Mr. AA, I'm writing a perfect 8th and 9th step, making amends, right, for how I've offended him and all that stuff. I get down there and I walk in to see him. His name is Patrick, but Pat Flynn, what a name, huh? So I go in to see him. I start talking to him. He says, I know what you're doing. I said, how do you know what I'm doing? He said, I'm sober and Alcoholics Anonymous 8 years. I said, God, I put the paper in my pocket. I sat down, let's get down to cases. And I started telling. He says, you didn't harm me. I said, well, I didn't do this. He said, I remember you taking me to meet Brooks Robinson. He was a classy third baseman for the old Baltimore Orioles. Very classy guy. Brooks Robinson and I were friends. We're still friends. You know. I knew Johnny and I as his wife, Dorothy, before they were married. So I took his little snot-nosed kid to see Johnny and I at his house. I forgot that.
I forgot. I remember my shortcomings just like you remember your faults. Shakespeare was right. The good that men do is interred with their bones, and evil that's long after them, and in our heads there. So do not do any ninth step without talking to a sponsor. For 33 years, I carried some guilt about that. I was talking to Lynn about humor, how it cuts through a lot of crap. He says, how about Expenser Shirley? And I forgot all about Expenser Shirley. In my early 20s, I used to date this girl, Shirley, a very nice girl. Very nice girl. I think I was sort of like a project for her. Like, I was like a diamond in the rough, and she was a social worker. She had a good heart, a very nice girl. But she had very expensive taste, you know, so I called her. Her name was Shirley, Expenser Shirley. And so she wanted to get married, not particularly to me, to any guy, because she probably figured she could straighten them out. You know what I mean? One of those kind of girls. Good heart. Very smart girl, too. So, one Saturday night, my mother dressed Pat up, who's about 2.5 years old now, in the cutest little sailor suit you ever saw. And I put him in the front seat of my brand new Roadmaster Buick and went up to see Expenser Shirley. She looks in the window and says, "Who's that?" I said, "That's my son." And I never saw Shirley again. Now, I forgot that for 30-some years, but he remembered it. See what I mean? We don't know our own inventory. That's what I'm demonstrating for you on my own experience. We don't know our own inventory without a sponsor who has done his inventory and can put some perspective on it. See? That's the reason we write everything. You ever notice you pile up a bunch of crap, I got to do this and do that, and you feel overwhelmed by it? Do you ever feel that way? And somebody says, "Wait a minute. Put this down on a piece of paper." And the pile of crap sort of goes down. Did you ever notice that? Yeah. That's the reason we use inventory. I think writing your inventory is like putting preparation H on hemorrhoids. It don't cure it, but it shrinks it down to where it's manageable. That's what I'm writing for it. Something like that, you know. Well, probably the thing that changed me most is working with other men. And it has changed how I pray. I used to pray for stuff, you know. Now I don't. I think my prayer is really changed because they're real short. And I know my prayers are heard because when I start to pray, God goes, "Phew, recess." He knows there's not going to be a lot of shit. And I'm not going to try to impress him. I'm not going to try to impress the power that made the Pacific Ocean. You know, seems a little above my class. You know, and I pray to remind Tom of the source of everything, not to tell God what I need. God already knows what I need. He laughs at what I want. You know, we both can laugh about that. But God knows what I need. I also pray. Well, I'll tell you one of the prayers I say. I like to say it in the morning. I say, "Good morning, God, Father. You know, it's me, Tom. I know you know who I am, but sometimes I forget who I am. Would you mind blessing me big time?" That's what I thought. Yeah, consider yourself blessed big time. Okay, God. P.S. There's some stuff you'd be wanting me to do today. I'd sort of appreciate it if you would let me know what it is. And I'd appreciate it if you keep sort of playing. I'm alcoholic, you know. I might need some power to do it too, God, because I'm wayward. And God just laughs at me. And I laugh at him. And my recollection from that morning prayer is God with a smile on his face and me, a kid, running out into the sunlight. It does not change what happens to me that day. It won't change. It changes how I see it. We have a disease of perception. My perception changes. And when my perception changes, the events of the day, how I see them change. And then I change. That's how it is with me. My Diwali. Wally, I can't meditate. You know what? I try to get to the yoga position. I threw my back out. Jesus Christ. You know, I try to meditate. I ain't no yogi. You know, I don't know. And so he says, Wally, I can't meditate. I'm telling you. I can't focus on anything. You know, you probably said the same thing, you know. So I'm not any different than anybody else. You know? And he says, well, you see, he talks like so strange. He says the truth. He says to me, Tom, did you ever see a girl that you really liked? Sure I did, Wally. I've seen quite a few that I really liked. He said, did you ever think of see a girl that you liked, you thought about her maybe four or five times in the same day? I said, yeah, Wally, I've seen girls like that. He says, that's meditation. Now we're going to teach you how to change the subject. But don't cop a plea and tell me you can't meditate, okay? Or you and your new car, right? And you and your new job. You and your new girlfriend. You ought to have meditation. That's bullshit. I cop the same plea. See? What I believe is this. And this is where I am now in my recovery. I'm going to pass this along to you. It's only Tom's belief. You will hear in Alcoholics Anonymous that after we trace all our character defects down, and I believe this, you will come down to some basic kind of a fear. And they will break the fears down, the fear that you will lose something that you believe you cannot live without, or you won't get something that you desperately need. That's the two fears that you will break down to. Right? God loves me. As you notice, I have a very tarnished track record. So he don't love because I'm good. He loves because he's good. It's very, very simple. He made me so he knows what I need. GM knows what Chevrolet parts need. God made me so he knows what I need. Right. It's real simple. Fear is a belief that God is indifferent to my set of circumstances or doesn't care. That's what fear is. Fear is a delusion. And we're familiar with delusions. It's a delusion. If God is everywhere, and if the big book is right, the great reality within you, and God is within you. And you're asked a question when you come to AA. God is either everything or nothing. What is your decision to be? Remember reading that? And if you have decided, go back and redecide. And if he's everything, everywhere, the source of everything is within you. You don't have to go outside of yourself to get it. Oh, I need him. You don't need him. You're okay the way you are. You pursue this, he may need you. It's called attraction. God is everywhere. He is the source. Your job may be a channel to some income. Your lover may be a channel to affection, but channels are known to change. Solitary sources never change. We only have one son. So it's my firm belief and experience today that all my character defects, if they can be traced to fear, and if my fear, only mine, can be traced to practicing the absence of God, which is a delusion. You have to do Pittsburgh plate class. What's that mean, man? That's what I taught it to her years ago. Pittsburgh plate class, PBG, here we go. You practice the presence of God. And that's the answer. It's the answer to fear. It will dissipate fear, just like the sunlight will dissipate the darkness. I don't know where the darkness goes, do you? Of course not. Not my business. I'm not in pursuit of darkness. I had enough of that. You know? I'm not in pursuit of fear. Trust God, your loving Father, who made you, knows what you need, and will see that you get it. That's all you do. God, here you are. I show up. God, here I am. Tell me what to do. I'm confused. God said, what else is new? He laughs at me. That's what I pray. He says, pray recess. Because he laughs at me. I'm not going to give him any heavy shit. Or try to impress him. You know, deal in a certain way and impress God. Wow, what an ego that is. Huh? Now, when you pray, if you feel that there's billions of people praying to God and it's a long line, sometimes we feel that way. And God don't see little me in that line. Don't tell nobody, but God's got an express line. If you guys wear secrecy, I'm going to get crowded because there's an express line. Is what I told you? Get in the thank you line. It's real short. That's right. It's real short. Thank you. There's hardly anybody there. Most of the alcoholics have done the 12 steps. Was she alive out there? I guess I recognize them. So, thank you, Lord. God just smiles at you, one of his kids. It's like that you do something for a little girl, and she comes back and says, thank you. How do you feel? Appreciated and loved. Isn't God love? Can you love God? Sure. How? Thank you. Like the little girl thanking you. Why, do you think you're a better parent than God? He's your father. Thank you. Thank you. He'd be glad to hear from you. First time I said thank you, he says, okay, stranger. I think God said keep coming back. So that's what I've been doing. I've been coming back with you guys. I don't have to do it hard or heavy or strenuous. Everybody's out there to try to get it all together. And I come with you. And together we got it all. If I had it all together, hell, I wouldn't know what to do with it. I'd screw it up with you. I mean, we both have before, you know what I mean? You've seen a few summers and winters. Yeah. So am I. So that's what we're like. So if you have trouble with this God thing, please examine your own heart. You don't have trouble with God. A lot of you confuse God with the church of your childhood. And you think you're telling the truth, but you're not. See? Some things happen in the church of your childhood. Even as you grew up, it wasn't sufficient for you. See? An adult version of God you need now. But you just got a child's version of God. It wasn't sufficient. So you had no problem with God. He loves you. His love for you is uninterrupted. He doesn't care what you did. What do you think? You're going to offend the power that made the goddamn Rocky Mountains? What kind of talent do you think you got? Sorry, you ain't big enough. That don't mean to shit that you did is okay. I ain't saying that. What I'm saying, you can't offend God. That's what I'm saying. You can cut yourself off from God like you cut yourself off from a boyfriend or a girlfriend. Can't you? If you're in a conversation with God on the phone, you hung up, he's okay. He was waiting for you to call back, so get on your knees and call back. Don't even Tom told you to call, okay? And if your God ain't big enough to handle that shit, you borrow mine till you get your own, because I'm sure he is big enough for both of us. And my God's broken for 26 years, 43 years I can swear to, can't watch. Talking with drunks. So you can talk to God in drunk, it's okay. Don't use those D's and nows and try to impress him, all that shit. Stuff. I mean, I shouldn't say shit, sorry. I'm sorry I said shit. Anyway. That's all you do. See, it's real simple. I talked to him. I'm going to thank you. But very, I really felt here with you like I was in my home group. I could feel the electricity from you people. And I believe it's the energy of the guy within you. And as you pull it all together, I can actually feel it, you know. So I just want to thank you for how you remind me, your God's kids, how you remind me of your father and my father, who I suspect is the same guy. So I guess we shouldn't be surprised if we're so similar since we had the same father. So thank you all.